This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Wow, we are back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hard to believe, already in hour two. If you have not connected with us tonight, we'd love to hear from you at eRadio Sports Info at eRadiosports.com, podcastarena.com. And as always, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, to kick off hour two, we are going to continue the NFL, a recap of the 2020 NFL draft with my producer, Jack McGraw. And you know, Jack, we hit on a variety of teams in hour one, but we've got to talk about the Cowboys because they're taking care of business in the offseason. They got a brand new head coach, but also, you know, with the addition of some of these players, to me, in my mind, they look like a legitimate playoff contender.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention all the Sooners that they took. Look at CeeDee Lamb and Neville Gilmore. Those two guys are plug and play guys immediately. And let's talk about the steal they had in the second round with Trayvon Diggs. I mean, this was one of the top safeties that was supposed to be recruited out of college, and he fell into the Cowboys' lap in the second round. So not only did they get great defensive help, but they had great offensive weapons to add to Dak Prescott to hopefully bolster this Cowboys team and make them a true playoff contender next season.
You know, Jack, you're right. The OU flavor to the Cowboys. I loved Lincoln Riley's tweet. He said, the Dallas Sooners. So it will be fun to watch. But, you know, a lot of concern. My heart goes out to Dak Prescott. Of course, we saw the news last week with the sudden and tragic death of his brother.
Luckily, he does have a longer offseason, potentially, that he can get his mind in the right place. But it could be anything as far as motivation, just to do better in his name.
Absolutely. And to honor him. What were your other takeaways from this year's draft and some of the teams that came away with a surprise pick?
For surprise pick, it's got to be no one bigger than Jordan Love going to the Packers. The fact that they would trade up in the first round to replace Aaron Rodgers' heir apparent when Aaron Rodgers probably still has 3 to 4 good years left in him is kind of astounding. And it's almost like the same thing that happened with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers almost a decade ago.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch these rookies and how everything ultimately plays out. But also, we didn't get a chance to talk about The Last Dance, episode 3 and 4. We look forward to 5 and 6 episode this weekend. All I can say is Dennis Rodman, he's a crazy guy. So we'll have to get into that. Much more coming your way here in hour two, SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we get underway with our next interview, we're going to be talking some baseball. We'd love to hear from you. Connect with us, many different platforms. PodcastArena.com. You can go back and listen to each and every one of our special guests. Info at eRadiosports.com and send us a tweet at eRadiosports. And of course, we always want to recognize the folks that make it happen. And Progressive Insurance. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new home, quote, Explorer. Only at Progressive.com. Well, the Major League Baseball season, we are still waiting on its return, and we're hoping and praying it's going to get underway. There's still so many roadblocks with the public health situation. It's got to improve before it gets back. But in the meantime, we want to celebrate America's favorite pastime, the sport that we love, talking about baseball. And we have selected a very special book review. The title of the book is The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. And our special guest is the author of Wax Pack, and that is Brad Berlukchian. Good evening, Brad. It's nice to have you with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, and we are excited to shine the spotlight on your book. And it's an amazing story because what you took a single pack of baseball cards from 1986, and you embarked on a quest to find all the players in the pack, a solo trip of 2015, and you racked up a lot of miles on that 2002 Honda Accord. So just kind of share with us and for our listeners, you know, pull back the curtain. I mean, what was the inspiration of this book?
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm still driving that Honda Accord right now, 250,000 miles on it.
Oh,
so,
my.
Still going strong. But no, I think, I mean, there's something, you know, baseball evokes the road and the road trip. And so when I was thinking about what I could do in terms of a long form writing project, I realized that the players that I grew up idolizing as a kid, and I collected thousands of baseball cards in the 80s, like so many other people, I kind of always was curious of what happened to those guys long after they were done playing. I think that Where Are They Now theme has universal appeal. And I was thinking back to the actual packs. You would go and had a stick of gum, you go to the store and buy them. And I thought, what more fun way to get at the spirit of discovery than to get a pack that had never been opened for all those years, from 1986, the first year that I collected cards, and kind of make this deal where whoever's in there, those are going to be the guys that I track down, and not only write about them, but, you know, take this crazy road trip across the country to try to find them and talk to them and kind of tell the story of what happens after baseball. And so that was the simple idea that I set out on. And then as I went on the road and met people, it evolved into something even bigger.
And what was your timeline as far as when you were trying to accomplish this goal? Because as I understand, I mean, you hit 30 states, as you had just talked about, you know, you racked up a lot of miles.
Yeah, so I had about a 7-week time frame. I'm a biology professor out here in California, and so I took the summer of 2015 and basically said, okay, I'm gonna try to hit all these places in 7 weeks. And I had to get back. You know, I couldn't really take too much time. I had to be back to teach. So I had mapped it all out, and for the most part, I was able to follow the itinerary pretty closely. So over 11,000 miles at the end of the trip.
You know, Brad, you talk about your strategy, but how challenging was it to, you know, track down these players and get them to open up and share your story? Because I find it interesting. I mean, your background, it's not in sports. I mean, you don't have a journalism degree, and so you were very journalistic as far as with the approach and what you produced. It was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I had always, my first job out of college was working at a travel magazine, and so I had a background in journalism and in science, and so this was a chance for me to actually put into practice all the training that I had had in the genre of travel and narrative nonfiction, which is what I always wanted to do. The process, as you said, the process of even getting to the players was enormous, and then, you know, getting them to talk and getting something good was a challenge as well. So I basically just had to use old-fashioned reporter techniques of lots of research, public record searches, I wrote snail mail letters and then followed up with emails and phone calls. And a lot of these guys still have landlines, so I was able to call them. But it still made it, you know, nerve-wracking and challenging to, when I did get a hold of somebody, to try to convince them to talk to me. And to their credit, they were very generous with their time. And not only that, when I actually did meet with them, I think one of the highlights of the book is how open these guys were and how, you know, how much they shared with me about their personal lives and their struggles, and makes the book much bigger than baseball and kind of talks about a lot of these universal themes we can all relate to.
You're listening to The Voice. Brad Baloukjian is with us. He is the author of The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. And it is so interesting because, you know, you talked about how you're a professor, you teach biology, at Merritt College in Oakland, California. But I have to wonder, I mean, you've always had such a passion for the game of baseball. I mean, you had just mentioned, you know, collecting over 1,000 baseball cards. I mean, did you ever have a desire to pursue a career in sports?
No, well, my physical abilities were limited enough early on to know that, you know, so I wasn't going to be on the athletic side. In terms of sports in general, I never seriously considered a career in sports because I think I'm more interested in sort of the human themes that sports evoke. So, like, for example, in my book, it's couched in baseball, but there's a lot of discussion about sort of what sports represents and why, you know, why baseball is so beloved. And it's because it creates this place where you can build relationships and, you know, the father and son relationships and the, you know, the parent child relationships that come out of it. And the relationships between the players and the fans themselves. So I've always liked what sports kind of represents in our society. And as a journalist, that's what I'm most interested in covering.
You identified with the underdog player. Why was that?
Yeah, so I was a strange kid, and in that my favorite players were the guys that were the bench warmers and the underdogs. And so I think that's because when I was a kid, I identified with them sort of subconsciously. I was an underdog myself, a late bloomer, got picked on a lot in school, and so I think I felt some kind of kinship with them. And it was especially rewarding to be able to meet these guys as an adult and to realize how much, not just me, but how much all of us have in common with these baseball players. And, you know, that's one of the takeaways from the book, is that I think the reader will feel a lot closer to the players, not because of any of their baseball accomplishments, but because of their willingness to share and divulge a lot of the things that we can all relate to. And a lot of the struggles, you know, their problems are the same problems that we deal with. And a lot of the players talked about their challenges with their fathers and divorce and addiction and all these different things that come up they came up in their lives after they were done playing. And it's something that I think all of us can relate to.
The title of the book is The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. Our very special guest tonight is the author, Brad Baluchian, who is with us. And we've got to share, as we wrap up our time, your favorite player was Don Carmen. How nervous were you to meet him for the first time? I mean, he was your idol when you were just a young boy.
That's right. I mean, it was surreal to know that this is the guy who I had his baseball card in a plaque, and I had his, you know, I wrote him a birthday card when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I'm getting to meet him. So, yeah, so it was, you know, internally there's this kind of struggle between the little kid that's so excited and then the part of me that's the very serious journalist that's trying to get, you know, tell his story, and also knowing that I was going to ask him some questions that were deeply personal that could make him uncomfortable, which made me uncomfortable. You know, it's like, okay, here you are going to meet your childhood hero, and then you're going to kind of ask some questions that he may not want to hear. So, you know, that was a really interesting thing to experience, and I tried to you know, capture that in the way I described that scene.
Glad you've been with us here, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, wrapping up our time with author of The Wax Pack. You can go anywhere online, Amazon.com, pick up a copy, The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. And our special guest has been the author, Brad Baluchian. Thank you so much, Brad, for joining us. Congratulations. It is an amazing read. And we look forward to another conversation. Let's have you back when baseball gets underway. We will be ready.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
You bet. Much more coming your way. The next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we're back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. We love our listeners. Chime in at eRadio Sports Info, at eRadioSports.com and PodcastArena.com. And we love O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. You can get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, we are ready to go inside the ropes. We're going to continue to talk about the reconfigured 2020 schedule. Always a true pleasure to have back with us each week former PGA Tour player and author, the great Larry Miller, who is muscling through, day 50 of the quarantine. So it just continues on. Are you staying strong?
Oh, we're staying strong. It's getting old, but you know what? We're in for the long haul, and we're going to stick it out. And I think, I really think that we are now on the downside of this, and things are going to start getting better rapidly. And so we're ready. We are ready, but we are steadfast and we're persevering through it.
You know, I love that, Larry. I think we are trending in the right direction. I mean, golf is a different feel. When I go to my course, it's packed. I mean, people are excited to get back out there. So give us the pulse. You're there in New Orleans. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, it's finally, you know, the flatten the curve deal, it's finally happening here. We are seeing a steady decrease in the number of cases and hospitalizations and people in ventilators. So it is getting better slowly. It's not a dramatic decline, but it is a steady decline, and that's why the governor has not lifted the stay-at-home orders here or the shutdown. Because we have to meet a criteria of 14 days of steady decline. So we're bearing down on that, and he's extended it to May 15th. But I think by May 15th, we're going to be in that space where we meet the criteria, and we'll start getting better, and things will start opening up.
We are inside the ropes with former PGA Tour pro Larry Miller. And, you know, each and every week, it seems like we start off our conversation with the PGA and the latest that's happening there. But let's start off with the ladies and the LPGA. They have a new target date to restart the 2020 season. And at the earliest, they're going to be a month later than the guys, July 15th, and they will get underway in Midland, Michigan. So that is some good news.
Yes, it is. And I know, boys, I know the ladies, those girls out there are just dying to get out there and play with or without spectators. It doesn't matter. They just want to compete. And I know they've lost 9 tournaments that had to be, you know, scratched from the schedule, and they've now compacted a bunch of tournaments here starting mid-July. My worry, though, is the staying power right now in this climate that we're in for not just the LPGA, but the Champions Tour as well. You know, the PGA Tour obviously is extremely well attended. Big crowds, huge crowds. So big TV money for those events. The LPGA Tour is really not that well attended. If you watch tournaments that are televised, you don't see the big crowds. Maybe in the majors, you see a little bit bigger. And same thing with the Champions Tour, too. The galleries are not very big. So they are totally dependent on that TV money to keep it going. Now, you know, how long, without spectators, without that human interest, I just wonder how long that the networks are going to stick with the Champions Tour and the LPGA Tour, too. I just hope that they're able to endure, especially the LPGA Tour, because it's such a tradition. You're going way back, almost like the men. You know, you go back to the days of Patty Berg and Betsy Rawls and, you know, all those old timers like Hogan and Snead on the
right.
PGA Tour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need that. And, you know, I love watching the lady pros play because they are so accurate with their shot making, much more so than the guys. They don't miss the fairways as much as the guys do, and maybe it's because they're not hitting at 330 yards. But I love their precision. I love their strategy and strategic shot making that they employ. They're just such great ball strikers. You know, I enjoy watching them, and I hope that they're able to last through all this.
Well, I love watching the LPGA. I'm fascinated, you know, with just their short game. Who's your favorite player today?
Today, wow, boy, that's tough. You know, some of them I can't pronounce a name, you know, I've always been impressed with the Americans, Stacey Lewis and, mm-hmm. and Christy Kerr and Morgan Pressel. But, you know, it seems like in the last few years that upper echelon of the LPGA Tour has been dominated by the Koreans, you know, mainly the South Korean girls. And, you know, interestingly, I've played with a few of those players, and I know some of the caddies that work for them, and they're, I can tell you why they've been so dominant is their work ethic. Some of the girls here in the States think they work hard, but they don't know how hard these South Koreans work. One of the caddies told me that when they're young, you know, they almost don't go to school. They just go to golf school.
Wow.
That's all they do. And one of the caddies told me that they literally practice putting 4 to 5 hours a day, every day. Now, you know, it's hard to even bend over that
long
putt. But they literally practice that much. And if you watch the South Koreans putt, they all have that same method. It's
mm-hmm.
that same
That's true.
One-piece motion,
yep.
Not a lot of wrist in the stroke. And they are fabulous putters, unbelievable putters. And it's because they practice so much. So, you know, that's what it takes. Hogan always said that you have to not only outplay and outthink your opponent, you have to outwork them. And that's the main thing is outworking them. I preach that to your boys all the time.
Uh-huh.
Outwork your your competition.
And they listen for sure. Hey, we are talking about the LPGA. Larry had just mentioned earlier that 9 events have been canceled, but they are looking at a return date of July 15th at the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational in Midland, Michigan. So I would say that the Women's Tour will be watching the PGA next month as they prepare for their first tournament back at the Colonial, which will be, of course, 1 month before the LPGA. All eyes will be on them. I wonder, too, if the LPGA Commissioner, Michael Wong, if he's going to be there in attendance in Fort Worth.
I bet he will, and I bet they're going to closely observe how things are done, how it's handled and how it's run, and if successful, which I'm sure it'll be, they'll try to emulate that in a lot of ways. And it's going to be interesting to see. There's a lot of things that become involved when you have a compacted schedule like that. You've got the fatigue factor where, a lot of players can't play 4 or 5 weeks in a row. But yet, with the compacted schedule and all the cancellations they had, that they want to play as much as they can. But how much is too much? Because you get to a point where you play too much and you just have to take time off because you get tired. And when you get tired in golf, the legs go, the wheels. And once the wheels go, it's any sport, not just golf, then your performance deteriorates as your energy level goes down. So it's going to be interesting to see who can play these multiple events in a row and still maintain their excellence. And same with the PGA, too. Same with the PGA Tour. It's going to be interesting. I think you're going to see a lot of the older players not able to play as much as the younger players. And that's going to affect the standings, world rankings, and so on, and money lists. So a lot of interesting things to see that's going to come out of this revised golfing schedule for all the tours.
Yeah, you bring up a great point because there is a big challenge ahead. The touring pros, they're going to hit the ground running, and it's going to be a packed schedule up until Christmas. And for the women, there's motivation as far as there's some very nice purses for these events. I guess I was listening to the Commissioner Michael Wong earlier this week, and he was saying that $57 million will be up for grabs. So that's good news and also a lot of motivation, right, Larry?
Yeah, and I'll tell you a wonderful thing that you just brought up, an addendum to that, is that a lot of the tournaments that were canceled, they have contributed funds to the tournaments that are rescheduled. And that is really a nice gesture.
Okay.
And yeah, I read that from the LPGA news line, and so they have actually taken their money. They're not going to have a tournament, but they've given it to the ones that are going to have a tournament. And that's great because that's going to help really boost the viability of the LPGA Tour and keep it going. And so wonderful thing and gesture and good to see. And let's hope that by mid-July, things are really rolling along in the golf world and we'll just kind of get back to normal.
Hey, glad you're with us. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. Yes, we are inside the ropes visiting with Larry Miller. Yep, we're talking about this schedule. The PGA, the LPGA looks to come back. But also, what about the modifications that would take place, with play as far as, making players putt with flagsticks in, or no rakes in the bunkers, and maybe use players, they would have to use a push card so they're not in contact with their caddies. I mean, it would kind of be like junior golf. My son Eli, he's got a tournament on Sunday, and this is all part of the requirements moving forward. But you wonder, will there be any pushback from the players if they are required to play this way? Would they be on board?
No, I don't think they would like it one bit. But we've got 6 weeks until that Fort Worth tournament, and this thing is so fluid and volatile the way it's going. I mean, in 6 weeks, who knows what's going to happen? We don't know what's going to be like in a week or 10 days. We've got 6 weeks to go. I do not think it's going to come to that. I don't think it's going to come to push carts and having to have the flag in. I don't think that's going to happen. But if it would happen, players would not be happy about that one bit because the caddy-player relationship is vital. Very important and contributes a great deal to a player's performance, the relationship with the caddy. So let's hope it doesn't come to that. I don't think it will. I think in 6 weeks' time, I think we're going to be well on our way to normality, maybe without spectators, but I think everything else will be back the way it was.
I love the optimism. Always a true pleasure when we go inside the ropes with Larry Miller right here at SB Nation Radio. Check him out, Larry Miller Golf. com. You stay safe. We'll talk next week. Thank you so much, Larry.
Look forward to it. It'll be a better week. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, Friday night, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker Campbell, along with you, many different ways to connect this evening. You can always go back and listen to all of our amazing guests at podcastarena.com. Email the show, info@eradiosports.com, and you can send us a tweet at eradiosports. Progressive Insurance, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Well, Major League Baseball, they continue to work very hard to formulate a game plan to start the 2020 season. It is still wait and see at this point. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to celebrate the game. And we wanted to pause tonight and honor perhaps the hardest throwing pitcher who ever lived, Steve Dilkowski. He died April 19th of coronavirus. And we have extended an invitation to baseball historian and author Galen White. And Galen, it's so good to have you back on the program. I know you've been on in the past, but we wanted you to help us celebrate Steve Dilkowski. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Steve Dilkowski is probably baseball's all-time what-if story. And I say that because by the all accounts, and this is people like Davey Johnson, who was manager of the Washington Senators, and Cal Ripken Sr., and even Ted Williams, who saw Dalkowski pitch and all agreed that he threw harder than anyone that they had ever seen. The problem with Dalkowski is that he was also extremely wild. He didn't know where the ball was going. And during this period of time with no Major League Baseball, the various sports channels have been playing Bull Durham quite a bit. And in Bull Durham, the pitcher Nuke LaRouche was really inspired by Steve Dalkowski. In fact, there was some of the dialogue in Nuke LaRouche between a manager and his assistant. They're talking about Nuke LaRouche walking 18 in one game and striking out 18 in a game.
Uh-huh.
Well, Steve Dalkowski, in his first game, his only win at Kingsport, Tennessee, his rookie season in 1957, he walked 18 in a game and struck out 24. So it is based on reality.
Baseball historian, author of several books on baseball, Galen White is with us at SB Nation Radio. We are talking about and celebrating the life of Steve Dilkowski. He died at the age of 80 from COVID-19. And as you were just talking about, he was a Baltimore Orioles minor league pitcher who never saw time in the majors. Why is that? I mean, you were talking about he was wild with his pitches, but he was a famous pitcher that we never heard of.
Yes. As a matter of fact, when he left pro baseball, when he quit at age 26, the Sporting News had called him a legend in his own time. So he was actually a living legend throughout his career because of how hard he could throw. In his second pro game, he hit a batter in the head. Now, legend has it that the batter lost part of his ear. That's really not true.
Uh-huh.
His ear was bloodied.
Uh-huh.
But those kind of stories perpetuated. And so as a result, you know, Ron Shelton, the producer, writer-producer of Bull Durham, he played baseball prior to getting in the movies. And so when he was playing in the California League, well, that's where Dalkowski one year walked 262 in a season and also struck out 262. So he heard all these Dalkowski stories, not only how hard he threw, but how hard he drank. He was an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. And so this was part of the problem that he had. However, as you mentioned, in 19, he had a close call, let's say, with the Baltimore Orioles. He was having a great spring training in 1963. He pitched six scoreless innings up into a game against the Yankees. And he struck out Elston Howard, a Hall of Famer, and then he struck out Roger Maris, who 2 years earlier had hit 61 home runs. And the New York Times reporter on the scene there wrote that when they met, Maris was theoretically standing near home plate in Miami, but his fanny was more or less in the Bahamas. That's the kind of respect that Dalkowski commanded, even of the greatest hitters. But what happened was, in fielding a bunt during that same exhibition game, he hurt his arm, and he never made it to the majors, and 2 years later, he was out of baseball entirely.
Steve Dilkowski, the human flamethrower. How fast were his pitches?
Cal Ripken, there was no radar guns at that time. The closest they came to clocking his fastball was at the Army Proving Grounds in Aberdeen, Maryland. They took him there. they set him up with some contraptions they had at that time to try to clock his fastball. The problem with the contraption is that in order for it to properly record the speed, it had to be thrown in a certain area. Well, Dalkowski had a hard time getting the ball into that certain area. They wound up finally concluding that he was throwing around 99 miles per hour. Cal Ripken Sr., who both managed him and caught him, said that he threw more like 110, 115 miles per hour. And not too many people will argue with that. He just threw harder than anyone who was around at that time, including Nolan Ryan.
Baseball historian, author of several books, Galen White is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. Your latest release, Left on Base in the Bush Leagues. You write about Dalkowski in a chapter titled A Tale of Two Legends. What did you share, Galen?
Well, I tried to share in particular his relationship with a couple of his minor league managers who were like fathers and who did their best to try to realize his full potential. Steve Dalkowski was a really nice guy. His managers liked him. He was sort of a son to one of the fellows I feature in the chapter, Harry Dunlop. And Harry Dunlop also caught the other person, the other pitcher I feature, Ron Netschai. Ron Netschai is the only pitcher to ever strike out 27 in a nine-inning game. So Harry caught Ron Netschai 27 strikeout game when he was 18 years old, and then later on, he manages Dalkowski, so he kind of had a bird's eye view of two of the greatest pitchers and two legendary pitchers. Netschai did pitch in the big leagues. He jumped all the way from Class D to the majors in 1952, and Branch Rickey later said that he was the greatest pitching prospect he ever saw, and he put Ron Netschai on his all-time team with Stan Musial, Jackie Robinson, some other greats. The problem with Ron Netschai is he had ulcers. He was only 19 years old, but he had ulcers. He was drafted into the Army. He lost weight. He tried to throw too quickly after he got out of the Army. He hurt his arm. So two different outcomes, both with Netschai and Dalkowski, but two fascinating pitchers who lead you to conclude, ask the question, what if? What if, they, in Dalkowski's case, he had been able to whip this demon of alcoholism? And what if Ron Netschai hadn't hurt his arm?
Left on Base in the Bush Leagues, latest release by Galen White, baseball historian and author. And, you know, we're down here in Houston. We love baseball, Galen. And I understand a third of the chapters was on players from Texas. Tell us about that.
Some great stories from Texas, and one of them down around Big Spring, which... in the late 40s, in the late 40s, early 50s, they actually fielded Cuban teams. The only non-Cuban was the manager, Pat Stacy, who was from around Stephenville, Texas. And they were known as the Yankees of the minor leagues at that time. They had some really great players. Camilo Pascual, who went on to star in the majors, he pitched in Big Spring. So I devote an entire chapter to baseball in Big Spring, and not only did Pat Stacy bring them here and they had these great baseball teams in Big Spring, but their families, many of these players brought their families over and were able to escape some of the issues in Cuba with Castro. So it was a humanitarian story as well as a great sports story.
Well, while we have you on the program tonight, we are so ready, Galen, for baseball to come back as soon as possible. There are so many concerns and issues that have to be worked out before it returns. So what are your thoughts on the proposed plan to return this year by Major League Baseball and perhaps having players all report to a single state like Arizona and remain in isolation in order to become affected?
When you think about World War II and FDR's decision to allow baseball to continue, I think that's the way we should be thinking this summer and allow baseball to get back as much as possible to normal. I realize that there are certain many concerns. I think there are ways of addressing those. It's important to the country and to our attitude and our peace of our state of mind, actually, that we have baseball back. It, during the war years, World War II and World War One as well. Yeah, World War One as well, and during the, even the flu epidemic in the late 1918, 1919, the Spanish flu, baseball continued, And I think it should here, and it certainly it's going to have to be adapted to the current situation, but we need it. We need it for not only our national pride, but also just to maintain a certain state of mind and a positive outlook about this is going to end. We're going to be able to enjoy baseball again with the full crowds, but up until then, it may have to be a little different, but let's bring it back.
So my question to you is, how do you decide, you know, when it is safe? In your mind, Galen, what are the conditions that must be in place in order for games to start? And you had just said, perhaps without fans.
Well, that's certainly one of the options, no fans. I think with all the testing that's going on now, I think there are ways of making sure that the people are entering a restaurant or a sports venue are reasonably safe. I mean, you never have any guarantees. I mean, how many times have we gone to games in the past where maybe somebody had a cold or a flu or something, and it might have been contagious, but we still went. We know from this whole situation, we know who, and I'm in that age group of people who are most at risk, and I think those people have to do what's necessary for them to stay safe, and I think other people, however, need to go about their life. And that's what I think is should be done sooner rather than later.
Well, perhaps if they have a shortened season, you know, there's been talk about, you know, how would this benefit, what team could benefit the most from this. But maybe this would be a motivation for players who might be considering retirement to go ahead and play this year with a modified schedule. It'd be worth it, right, Galen, don't you think?
I think so. And stop and think about this. Athletes' careers are extremely short as it is. And to take a full year out of some of their careers would really be a shame for all of us, not just the athlete, for those who enjoy seeing them play. And so I think it's important that we try to do that. And I think also, you know, there's other things going to be adjusted. The relationship of the fans to the players for a period of time is going to be affected. One of the things I was talking with somebody about is this whole idea of autographs and young kids getting autographs.
Oh,
from the
yes.
Heroes. Well, that
true.
May change for a while, but I hope that we don't stray too far from what we normally expect from the game, because it's important that we have this interaction with the players, and I think also it's important to our communities. Think of the pride in Houston when the Astros won the World Series a couple years ago, and of course now they're trying to rebound from this spine scandal. So I think it's important for the game to go on and for people to have some entertainment. Otherwise, it's a pretty drab existence.
Well, on a positive note, when we talk about the Astros, I mean, it's been great to see so many of the Astros star players stepping up, like Justin Verlander, donating paychecks to organizations to help battle COVID-19 and giving back to the community. And I think that can really help with the healing process of what went down with the Astros.
I agree, and I think we're going to probably see more of that, and that's good. I think the athletes recognize that they're in a very privileged position, and they're able financially to do some things that to help others who need help right now. I mean, this whole pandemic, think of all the people who work at these sports venues, the guys selling peanuts and hot dogs, and the groundskeepers, the ushers, all these people are affected by this. And I just think the sooner we can bring baseball back and gain some sense of normalcy, there'll probably be a new norm. But we've been through that before, and I think we can go through that now. But I think baseball is very, very essential to our comeback.
Okay, we're going to continue around the horn with baseball historian Galen White after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin baseball historian and author of several books, Left on Base in the Bush Leagues, Galen White. You know, it is an unprecedented time. It's still a waiting game as we're talking about Major League Baseball delays the start of the 2020 season. It's hard to know if it will start at all, but if it was to get underway, I mean, how long do you think that the players would need as far as with training camp?
Well, in the old days, spring training was about 3-4 weeks, and I think they could probably do that in 3-4 weeks. They could probably start up in June or July. It may well be that you start it up around July 4th. That would be a great way to celebrate the 4th of July, is bring baseball back in some fashion. But I think we need it for our national psyche, and I think that there's ways of doing it to where you're addressing some of the major problems with bringing it back too soon. But it is important. And think for the minor leagues. We've been talking primarily about major leagues.
Oh, yes.
They were going to restructure the minors anyway. They hadn't announced the final plans, but they were going to eliminate some of the minor leagues. And I'm hoping that with the COVID-19, that they don't deepen the cuts more than what they were intending, or it doesn't hasten the departure of some of these leagues, because the minors are so important to the majors. The minors are where many fans have their first interaction with future big league stars. And it's, I know for me growing up in Los Angeles before they had a major league team, my heroes initially were minor league players. And as they went on up into the majors, I followed them. And I think this is true of many fans. So it's important that we keep some viable structure of minor leagues in baseball.
A wonderful conversation tonight with baseball historian, author of several books. His latest release, Left on Base in the Bush Leagues, and that is Galen White. Check him out, galenwhitebaseball.com, and you can pick up a copy of his books. Thank you so much, Galen. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon. We're ready for baseball.
I am. Thank you very much, Alyssa.
Of course. That, of course, is Galen White, who is joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio.